Aloha, everybody. This is Kathy Bilski, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show on UPR and radio. And this is January 15th, 2021. Whoa. So tonight, I wanted to talk more about the Great Reset and who created it. And it's something we really need to know, we really need to talk about, because it's a fascist program. And they want to take away everything from us, from money, you know, real dollars, to land, to property. And they say by 2030, we will not own any property, but we'll be happy. Really? And what will we be happy? And what will they make us do, or what will they do to us to make us happy? Yeah. I don't trust it either. And part of that, the Great Reset, is the melding of artificial intelligence to human, and they call it transhumanism. So I wrote this little article today, and I'm going to share it with you before we get into something really serious. And I call it Ode to Simpler Cars. And really, when you think about it, how many of you have had challenges like this? Ode to Simple Cars. Recently, I had a small car accident. I was rolling my 600-pound crystal into the store like I have done for the past 15 years. This day, the crystal got away from me. Went down two huge steps, and my car door stopped up. I was glad it was my car, and thankful my car was there, for it stopped the big crystal from breaking. The crystal had just a few chips come off, and I didn't care about the dent it made in the car, for the crystal was worth much more than the car. Then I realized the 650-pound crystal hit the car so hard, it jammed it shut. And then I thought, you know, if that was the worst that's going to happen, I can live with it. Besides, I really didn't use that door very much. My friends understood and simply crawled over the driver's seat to sit in front or sit in the back seat, taxi style. Now, try explaining a 650-pound rock fell into your car to an insurance adjuster. Oh yeah, that was a real hoot. Now I own a 2014 Nissan Versa four-door, and I had to buy a car after my 2004 Prius's big battery went out. And that would have cost me way too much money to fix. So I started looking for another car. Oh no, come back, there we go. Now, the Prius and I had a lot of good times on the road, but such is life and all good things can come to an end. The used car dealer had two cars I was interested in, a Nissan Versa fully loaded for $16,000, or a Versa that had none of those features for $12,000. Realizing that the more extra a car has, the more repair work can be needed. Also, there was a $4,000 difference in price. So I chose the simpler model. Now, what does simple mean? It means no electrical anything, except it does tell me when the car has a low tire. Now, that was a very practical feature and really came in handy over the years. But it means no electric windows. You have to use your whole arm to make the window work. No electric locks. And that means you walk around your car at least once to make sure all the doors are locked, and if not, you do it manually. A very simple car. Now let's jump to the future, where I need to get a rental car to use while my car door was being replaced and painted. The rental is amazing. It has all these accessories one could possibly dream of. Now, after the agent showed me how to start it for Of course, it didn't need a real key, and you just push the button. Yeah, I know buttons well. For the starter button, went out twice in my wash machine, and that was irritating to say the least in a costly repair. Ah, button memories. The dashboard lit up like a Christmas tree with all it wanted to show me. I was overwhelmed. And then the car asked me to choose the dashboard program. Oh, I tried to touch the dashboard window and nothing happened. Huh. Well, then, I decided to just ignore it. Maybe it would figure it out on its own. Oh my God, the car. It did. It picked the calm program. I was shocked. How did it know I was panicking with all the newness of a brand new car fully loaded? I didn't say anything out loud other than panicking in my mind. I was silent and freaked out, for the car knew which program to pick. As I surveyed all the accessories, like the steering wheel that warmed up, the dual heaters that it had, I mean, that meant I could have the car warm on my side and freezing for my long-haired Pomeranian, who assumes the air is on just for her, which it is. That's a nice feature. It does have a built-in GPS system. Nice, but really not needed much in Hawaii. And besides, I have a feature that on my phone. Now, the car has lots of fun accessories and a lot more things that can go wrong. God, I can't wait to get back into my no accessory car where I have to use my arms to roll up the windows and lock the car manually. I started to worry if I was becoming like my older sister, whom when I was younger had to choose a brand new washer, and she did. A brand new wringer washer. Oh, you don't know what that is, you say? All right, let me share with you. Let me explain. Now, I want you to imagine this in your mind's eye. You've got at least two tubs of water and the wringer washer. So you soak your first clothes first in one tub, wring them out through the wringer, which did have a crank to use, I will give it that. Then, when the clothes have washed, you put them through the wringer again into a tub of clean water. Take a stick and poke them till the soap came out and put them through the wringer again. And do that maybe twice. Then you could dry them. Nothing like throwing them into an automatic washer, punch a button, and walk away because it's doing its thing without you doing anything else. Needless to say, I hated washing clothes. Or when my sister had to buy a new refrigerator, she insisted on finding one that you had to defrost manually. Now, if you never did this, first you had to take all the frozen stuff out of the freezer because it was packed with so much ice that it was at least 6 inches or more thick all the way around the freezer. So much ice you could barely fit food in it. And you had to take a knife to chisel the ice out. Yep, good times. And you kids think you've got it hard? She finally gave up looking when the sales rep said, "You don't make that kind anymore." Now, I gave this much thought and decided that my Versa would one day be worth a lot of money. It's going to become a classic car that doesn't break down because an electric accessory stopped working. It would be a very rare breed of car that's hard to find due to its simplicity and lack of accessories. Time will tell. I will keep my special car that allows me to still think for myself. And if I accidentally lock the front door in it with the keys in the car, I can still get in the back door because I forgot to lock it, and the car won't automatically lock all the doors. Will I ever upgrade to a newer car with all the perks? Probably, especially when I find that they don't make a simple car anymore. God, I am becoming my sister. I'll keep the verse as a backup car and, I don't know, possibly a future antique. Now, what was the point of that story? You can get too much, it gets so high tech and so AI that you think everything's got to be improved and it's better. And if you add one more gadget, it's going to be greater. And you never think of, oh, what happens if this stuff breaks down? There are people out there that like things a little bit simpler, that's not so complicated and complex. And AIs don't necessarily make our life simpler, do they? I mean, for example, have you ever had to call, make a call to your phone company, a credit card company, Dish? And what happens? You get an AI. I mean, you're calling them because you got a problem. So now you've got this AI, which is a computer voice that's trying to tell you and figure out what you want it to do. And all you want to do is talk to a human, which you will eventually get to anyway, because the human is the only one that can solve your problem. And we were had a problem with Dish the other day, and we called it. And of course, the AI answered, the artificial intelligence, and I question the word intelligence. And the darn thing couldn't understand what we were saying, no matter how clearly we spoke. And it had the audacity to say, "Oh, please forgive me. I'm still learning words." And I'm thinking, how ridiculous is this? You are learning words when humans already know words they don't have to learn. Hire a darn human because it's the humans again. And correct me if I'm wrong, that finally solve your problem. And they want to cut us out and replace us with all these machines. I don't know about you. It doesn't make my life easier. It may make that company's life easier, but not ours because they've gotten cheaper and think that us humans aren't worth it, that they can replace us. And they are. I saw online the other day where some brilliant scientist invented a robot that could herd sheep. Why? Do you not like dogs? Did a dog attack you when you were young, so you figured you'd have to create an artificial robot that's the only safe dog that could be your friend? I mean, my God, how ridiculous. But this is how the world is progressing, and we are supposed to go, oh, wow, isn't this great? And they've said that if you can't keep up with this, and if you don't like what's coming up, you're just going to be left out. Well, leave me the hell out, because it certainly isn't what I want. And those robots, by the way, are taking away jobs, which they are not giving people another job opportunity. And if they do, what kind of jobs are they going to give them? Oh, we're going to help you go into computers where now you can sit at home and be totally unsocial. And we can watch everything you do. That's warm and fuzzy. Your skills are no longer needed. And that is part of the Great Reset. So part of my story was there's so much crap on those cars that are not needed. And they are fun to have. What can I say? But oh my God. Anyway, let us get into more of what is called the Great Reset that was in Time Magazine. And I want to introduce you to Klaus Schwab. And it's his idea of the Great Reset. And you can also call it the Great Fascist Reset. So let us begin. Whoops, there we go. All right, Klaus Schwab was born in Ravensburg in 1938. Klaus Schwab is a child of Adolf Hitler's Germany, a police state regime built on fear and violence, on brainwashing and control, on propaganda and lies, on industrialism and eugenics, on dehumanization and disinfection, on a chilling and grandiose vision of a new order that would last 1,000 years. Now, Klaus's father, who was an industrialist, also supported Hitler's war effort. So Klaus was indoctrinated into Nazi Germany's thoughts and everything that it became. And yes, Nazis are generational. So Schwab seems to have dedicated his life to reinventing that nightmare and to try to turn it into a reality, not just for Germany, but for the whole world. Or still, on his own words confirmed time and time again, his technocratic fascist vision is also a twisted transhumanist one, which will merge humans and machines in curious mixes of digital and analog life, which will infect our bodies with smart dust, and in which the police will apparently be able to read our brains. Give you warm fuzzies, and I've only just started. And as we see, we will see he and his accomplices are using the COVID-19 crisis to bypass democratic accountability, to override opposition, to accelerate their agenda, and to impose it on the rest of humankind against our will in what he terms a great reset. Now, this guy says Schwab is not, of course, a Nazi in the classical sense, being neither a nationalist nor an anti-Semite, as testified by the $1 million Dan David Prize he was awarded by Israel in 2004. The 21st century fascism has found different political forms through which to continue its core project of reshaping humanity to suit capitalism through blatantly authoritarian means. The new fascism is today being advanced in the guise of global governance, biosecurity, the new normal, the new deal for nature, and the fourth industrial revolution. Schwab, the octogenarian and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, sits at the center of a matrix like a spider on a giant web. The original fascist project in Italy and Germany was all about a merger of state and business, while communism envisages the takeover of business and industry by the government, which theoretically acts in the interest of the people. Fascism was all about using the state to protect and advance the interests of the wealthy elite. Schwab was continuing his approach in a denazified post-World War II context, when in 1971 he founded the European Management Forum, which held annual meetings at Davos, Switzerland. Now, I want to give you a really quick fun fact about Davos, Switzerland, that during World War II, it was the center or the Nazis. And since I see Schwab as being a Nazi, why wouldn't he put it in Davos? Now, here he promoted his ideology of stakeholder capitalism, in which businesses were brought into closer cooperation with government. Stakeholder capitalism is described by Forbes magazine as the notion that a firm focuses on meeting the needs of all its stakeholders, customers, employees, partners, the community, and society as a whole. Even in that context of a particular business, it is invariably an empty label. As the Forbes article notes, it actually only means that firms can go on privately shoving money to their shareholders and executives while maintaining a public front of exquisite social sensitivity and exemplary altruism. But in the general social context, the stakeholder concept is even more nefarious, discarding any idea of democracy, rule by the people, in favor of rule by corporate interests. Society is no longer regarded as a living community, but as a business whose profitability is the sole valid aim of human activity. Schwab set out his agenda back in 1971 in his book, Modern Enterprise Management in Mechanical Engineering, where his use of the term stakeholders effectively redefined human beings not as citizens, free individuals, or members of community, but as secondary participants in a massive commercial enterprise. The aim of each and every person's life was to achieve long-term growth and prosperity for this enterprise. In other words, to protect and increase the wealth of the capitalist elite. This all became even clearer in 1987 when Schwab renamed his European Management Forum the World Economic Forum. The WEF describes itself on its own website as the global platform for public-private cooperation, with admirers describing how it creates partnerships between businessmen, politicians, intellectuals, and other leaders of society to define, discuss, and advance key issues on the global agenda. The partnerships with which the WEF creates are aimed at replacing democracy with a global leadership of handpicked and unelected individuals whose duty is not to serve the public but impose the rule of the 1% on that public with as little interference from the rest of us from the rest of us as possible. In the book, Schwab writes for public consummation, he expresses himself in the two-faced cliche of corporate spin and greenwashing. The same empty terms are dished up time and time again in Shaping the Future of the Fourth Industrial Revolution, a guide to building a better world. Schwab talks of the inclusion of stakeholders and the distribution of benefits, and of sustainable and inclusive partnerships, which will lead us to an all-inclusive, sustainable, and prosperous future. Behind this bluster, the real motivation behind his stakeholder capitalism, which he was relentlessly promoting at the WEF's 2020 Davos conference, is profit and exploitation. For instance, in his 2060 book, The Fourth Industrial Revolution, Schwab writes about the uberization of work and the consequence advantages for companies, particularly fast-growing startups in the digital economy. As human cloud platforms classify workers as self-employed, they are, for the moment, free of the requirement to pay minimum wages, employer taxes, and social benefits. The same capitalist callousness shines through in his attitude towards people nearing the end of their working lives and in need of a well-deserved rest. Aging is an economic challenge because unless retirement ages are drastically increased so that older members of society can continue to contribute to the workforce, an economic imperative that has many economic benefits. The working age population falls at the same time as the percentage of dependent elders increases. So, yeah, no more retiring at 65 for this guy. And he's 88, by the way, one of the wealthiest men on the earth. And he wants all the seniors, I don't know, to work till we're 75 to be productive. And if we're not, we can just die off. Now, if that doesn't say a little bit of Nazi, I don't know what does. Everything in this world is reduced to economic challenges, economic imperatives, and economic benefits for the ruling capitalistic class. The myth of progress has long been used by the 1% to persuade people to accept the technologies designed to exploit and control us. And Schwab plays on this when he declares that the fourth industrial revolution represents a significant source of hope for continuing the climb in human development that has resulted in dramatic increases in the quality of life for billions of people since 1800. Oh my God, the bullshit is just getting higher. He enthuses, while it may not feel momentous to those of us experiencing a series of small but significant adjustments to life on a daily basis, it's not a minor change. The fourth industrial revolution is a new chapter in human development on a par with the first, second, and third industrial revolutions, and once again, driven by the increasing availability and interaction of a set of extraordinary technologies. But he is well aware that technology is not ideologically neutral, as some like to claim. Technologies and societies shape each other, he says. After all, technologies are tied up in how we know things, how we make decisions, how we think about ourselves and each other. They are connected to our identities, worldviews, and potential futures, from nuclear technologies to the space race, smartphones, social media, cars, medicine, and infrastructure. The meaning of technologies makes them political. Even the concept of a developed nation implicitly rests on the adoption of technologies and what they mean for us economically and socially. Technology for the capitalist behind it has never been about social good, but purely about profit. And Schwab makes it clear that the same remains true of his fourth industrial revolution. He enthuses. Fourth industrial revolution technologies are truly disruptive. They upend existing ways of sensing, calculating, organizing, acting, and delivering. They represent entirely new ways of creating value for organizations and citizens. Now, in case the meaning of creating value was not clear, he gives some examples. Drones represent a new type of cost-cutting employee working amongst us and performing jobs that once involved real people. And the use of ever smarter algorithms is rapidly extending employee productivity. For example, in the use of chatbots to augment and increasingly replace live chat support for customer interaction. Schwab goes into some detail about the cost-cutting, profit-boosting marvels of this brave new world in the fourth industrial revolution. I mean, my God, this guy can take a hike. Now, he also goes on to explain, sooner than most anticipate, the work of professionals as different as lawyers, financial analysts, doctors, journalists, accountants, insurance underwriters, or librarians may be partly or completely automated. The technology is progressing so fast that Christian Hammond, co-founder of Narrative Science, a company specialized in automated narrative generation, forecast by the mid-2020s, 90% of news could be generated by algorithm, most of it without any kind of human intervention, apart from the design of the algorithm, of course. It is this economic imperative that informs Schwab's enthusiasm for a revolution that is fundamentally changing the way we live, work, and relate to one another. Yeah, the jerk is taking away human jobs, and he's saying humans have no meaning anymore because they can replace us with bots and drones and robots. Schwab waxes lyrical about the 4IR, which he insists is unlike anything humankind has experienced before, he gushes. Consider the unlimited possibilities of having billions of people connected by mobile devices, giving rise to unprecedented processing power, storage capabilities, and knowledge access. Or think about the staggering confluence of emerging technological breakthroughs covering wide-ranging fields such as artificial intelligence, AI, robotics, the Internet of Things, autonomous vehicles. Oh, yeah, like we really want cars to drive without a driver, and that's been going really well, huh? No accidents with that, huh? 3D printing, nanotechnology, biotechnology, materials science, energy storage, and quantum computing, to name a few. Many of these innovations are in their infancy, but they are already reaching an inflection point in their development as they build on and amplify each other in a fusion of technologies across the physical, digital, and biological worlds. And I'm going to add Heil Hitler. He also looks forward to more online education involving the use of virtual and augmented reality to dramatically improve educational outcomes, to sensors installed in homes, clothes, and accessories, cities, transport, and energy networks, and of course, smart cities. And they're all important data platforms. All things will be smart and connected to the internet, says Schwab, and this will extend, are you ready for this, to animals. As sensors wired in cattle can communicate to each other through a mobile phone network. Okay. Now, Schwab loves the idea of smart cell factories, which could enable the accelerated generation of vaccines and big data technologies. This, he ensures us, will deliver new and innovative ways to service citizens and customers. We will have to stop objecting to businesses profiting from harnessing and selling information about every aspect of our personal lives. Let me read that one again. Now, this is Klaus the Nazi saying, we, the citizens, the masses, will have to stop objecting to businesses profiting from harnessing and selling our information about every aspect of our personal lives. Establishing trust in the data and algorithms used to make decisions will be vital, insists Schwab. Citizen concerns over privacy and establishing accountability in business and legal structures will require adjustments in thinking. I thought about it, and no. Now, how is this sitting with you guys? This is what they want to do to us. And this is the man that's put together the program. Don't tell me he's not a Nazi. Prove it. At the end of the day, it's clear that all this technology excitement revolves purely around profit or value, as Schwab prefers to term it in his 21st century corporate newspeak. Thus, blockchain technology will be fantastic and provoke an explosion in tradable assets, as all kinds of value exchange can be hosted on the blockchain. The use of distributed ledger technology at Schwab's could be the driving force behind massive flows of value in digital products and services, providing secure digital identities that can make new markets accessible to anyone connected to the internet. In general, the interest of the 401R for the ruling business elite is that it will create entirely new sources of value and give rise to ecosystems of value creation that are impossible to imagine with a mindset stuck in the third industrial revolution. Now, the technologies of the 401R rolled out by 5G pose unprecedented threats to our freedom, as Schwab concedes. The tools of the fourth industrial revolution enable new forms of surveillance and other means of control that run counter to healthy, open societies. But this does not stop him from presenting them in a positive light, as when he declares that public crime is likely to decrease due to the convergence of sensors, cameras, AI, facial recognition software. He describes with some relish how these technologies can intrude into the hitherto private space of our minds, reading our thoughts, and influencing our behavior. He's talking about 5G, guys. Schwab predicts, as capabilities in this area improve, the temptation for law enforcement agencies and courts to use techniques to determine the likelihood of criminal activity, assess guilt, or even possible retrieve memories directed from people's brains will increase. Even crossing a national border might one day involve a detailed brain scan to assess each an individual's security risk. I think Cruise did a movie like this, and I can't remember the name of the movie, but it's when, they can actually read our minds. And predict the future and then go into the past and put people in jail because they are now the thought police. Whew, scary stuff. Now, there are times when the WEF chief gets carried away, like this isn't carried away, by his passion for a sci-fi future in which long-distance human space travel and nuclear fusion are commonplace, and in which the next trending business model might involve someone trading access his or her thoughts for the time-saving option of typing a social media post by thought alone. Talk of space tourism under the title The Forced Industrial Revolution and the Final Frontier. Is almost funny as is his suggestion that a world full of drones offers a world full of possibilities. But the further the reader progresses into the world depicted in Schwab's books, the less of a laughing matter it all seems. The truth is that his highly influential figure at the center of the new global order currently being established is an out-and-out transhumanist who dreams of an end to natural, healthy human life and community. Schwab repeats his message time and time again, as if to be sure we have been duly warned. The mind-boggling innovations triggered by the fourth industrial revolution, from biotechnology to AI, are redefining what it means to be a human, he writes. The future will challenge our understanding of what it means to be a human, from both a biological and a social standpoint. And already advances in neurotechnologies and biotechnologies are forcing us to ask the question, what it means to be a human. He spells it out in more detail in Shaping the Future of the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Fourth Industrial Revolution technologies will not stop at becoming part of the physical world around us. They will become part of us. Indeed, some of us already feel that our smartphones have become an extension of ourselves. Not me. Today's external devices, from wearable computers to virtual reality headsets, will almost certainly become implantable in our brains and bodies. Exoskeletons and prosthetics will increase our physical power, while advances in neurotechnology enhance our cognitive abilities. We will become better able to manipulate our own genes and those of our children. These developments raise profound questions. Where do we draw the line between human and machine? And what does it mean to be a human? Now, Schwab, Klaus, devotes a whole section of his book to altering the human being. Here he drills over the ability of new technologies to literally become part of us and invokes a cyborg future involving curious mixes of digital and analog life that will redefine our very nature. He writes these technologies will operate within our own biology and change how we interface with the world. They are capable of crossing the boundaries of body and mind, enhancing our physical abilities, and even having a lasting impact on life itself. No violation seems to go too far for Schwab, who dreams of active implantable microchips that break the skin barrier of our bodies, smart tattoos, biological computing, and custom designed organisms. Now, wasn't Elon Musk coming out with his great idea of putting a computer chip in our brains so we can actually do this and interface with the internet? Now, think about that. Now you're connected to the internet, and it is connected to you. So what happens if somebody hacks into that program, and now they've got total control over you? And have you paid attention to what's going on in China, where they now monitor their citizens, everything they do? And even the kids, they put these little little hat on them that monitors their emotions, their feelings, tells them if they're, you know, should be studying more, they're studying too much. And if they don't like what you do, you get a lot of your privileges taken away that we consider freedom. You get less, you don't get the better jobs. Your freedom literally gets restricted to now maybe you can only travel 5 miles away from your house. You may not be able to get a passport to travel out of country, to go to universities. And that's going on in China right now. Let's get back to Klaus. He is delighted to report that sensors, memory switches, and circuits can be encoded in common human gut bacteria. Bacteria! Okay, that smart dust, arrays of full computers with antennas. Each much smaller than a grain of sand can now organize themselves inside the body, and that implanted devices will likely also help to communicate thoughts normally expressed verbally through a built-in smartphone and potentially unexpressed thoughts or moods by reading brain waves and other signals. Didn't I just say they're doing this in China? Oh. Synthetic biology is on the horizon of Schwab's 41R world, giving the technocratic capitalist rulers of the world the ability to customize organisms by writing DNA. The idea of neurotechnologies in which humans have fully artificial memories implanted in their brain is enough to make some of us feel faintly sick. As is the prospect of connecting our brains to VR through cortical modems, implants, or nanobots. It is of little comfort to learn that this is all, of course, in the greater interests of capitalist profiteering, since it heralds new industries and systems for value creation and represents an opportunity to create entire new systems of value in the fourth industrial revolution, FIR. And what about bioprinting of organic tissues, or the suggestion that animals could potentially be engineered to produce pharmaceuticals and other forms of treatment? Ethical objections, anyone? I know I happened to see, I don't know, last week or 2 weeks ago, where they're now growing human body parts from a pig. Anyway, it's all evidently good for Schwab, who is just happy to announce the day when cows are engineered to produce in its milk a blood clotting element, which hemophiliacs lack, is not far off. Researchers have already started to engineer the genomes of pigs with a goal of growing organs suitable for human transplant. God, I am just so ahead of me. It's even more disturbing. Ever since the sinister eugenics program of the Nazi Germany into which Schwab was born, the science has been deemed beyond the pale of human society. But now, however, he evidently feels eugenics is due a revival, announcing with regards to genetic editing that it is now far easier to manipulate with precision the human genome with variable embryos means that we are likely to see the advent of designer babies in the future who possess particular traits or who are resistant to a specific disease. In the notorious 2002 transhumanist treatise, Cyborg, Kevin Warwick predicts humans will be able to evolve by harnessing the super intelligence and extra abilities offered by the machines of the future by joining with them. All this points to the development of a new human species. Known in the science fiction world as cyborg. Now, it doesn't mean that everyone has to become a cyborg. If you are happy with your state as a human, then so be it. You can remain as you are. But be warned, just as we humans split from our chimpanzees cousins years ago, so cyborgs will split from humans. Those who remain as humans are likely to become subspecies. They will effectively be the chimpanzees of the future. Schwab seems to be hinting at the same future of a superior enhanced artificial transhuman elite. Nazi! Separating from the natural born rabble in this particular damning passage from the 4IR, we are at the threshold of a radical systemic change that requires human beings to adapt continuously. As a result, we may witness an increasing degree of polarization in the world, marked by those who embrace change versus those who resist it. Guess who will be a resistor? Oh, this gives rise to an inequality that goes beyond the societal one described earlier. This ontological inequality will separate those who adapt from those who resist. The material winners and losers in all senses of the world. The winners may even benefit from some form of radical human improvement generated by certain segments of the fourth industrial revolution, such as genetic engineering, from which the losers will be deprived. This risks creating class conflicts and other clashes unlike we've ever seen before. Schwab was already talking about a great transformation back in 2016 and is clearly determined to do everything in his not inconsiderable power to bring about his eugenics-inspired transhumanist world of artifice, surveillance, control, and exponential profit. But as revealed by his reference above to class conflicts, he is clearly worried by the possibility of social resistance and how to advance. If technologies receive a great deal of resistance from the public, Schwab's annual WEF shindigs at Davos have long been met by anti-capitalist protests, and despite the current paralysis of the radical left, he is well aware of the possibility of renewed and perhaps broader opposition to his project, with the risk of resentment, fear, and political backlash. Yes, that is what we need to manifest for that old man and all his cronies. His more recent book, he provides a historical context, noting that anti-globalization was strong in the run-up to 1914 and up to 1980s, then less so during the 1920s. But it reignited in the 1930s as a result of the Great Depression. He notes that in the early 2000s, the political and social backlash against globalization relentlessly gained strength. And he says that social unrest has been widespread across the world in the past 2 years, citing the Gilets Jaunes in France, among other movements, and invokes the somber scenario that the same can happen again. Oh, yes, absolutely. I will give that energy. So, how is an honest technocrat supposed to roll out his preferred future for the world without the agreement of the global public? How can Schwab and his billionaire friends impose their favored society on the rest of us? One answer is relentless brainwashing propaganda. Nazi. Churned out by the mass media and academia, owned by the 1% elite. What they like to call a narrative. For Schwab, the reluctance of the majority of humankind to leap aboard his 4IR, his industrial revolution, express reflects the tragedy that the world lacks a consistent, positive, and common narrative that outlines the opportunities and challenges of the fourth industrial revolution, a narrative that is essential if we are to empower a diverse set of individuals and communities and avoid a popular backlash against the fundamental changes underway, he adds. It is therefore critical that we invest intention and energy in multi-stakeholder cooperation across academic, social, political, national, and industry boundaries. These interactions and collaborations are needed to create positive, common, and hope-filled narratives, enabling individuals and groups from all parts of the world to participate in and benefit from the ongoing transformation. Now, one of these narratives whitewashes the reasons for which the fourth industrial revolution technology needs to be installed everywhere in the world as soon as possible. Schwab is frustrated that more than half of the world's population, around 3.9 billion people, still cannot access the internet. With 85% of the population of developing countries remaining offline and therefore out of reach as compared to 22% of the developed world, the actual aim of the fourth industrial revolution is to exploit those populations for profit by global techno-imperialism. But of course, that can't be stated on the propaganda narrative required to sell the plan. Instead, their mission has to be presented, as Schwab himself does, as a bid to develop technologies and systems that serve to distribute economic and social values such as income, opportunity, and liberty to all stakeholders. He piously postures as a guardian of woke liberal values, declaring, thinking exclusively goes beyond thinking about poverty or marginalized communities simply as an aberration, something we can solve. It forces us to realize that our privileges are located on the same map as their suffering. It moves beyond income and entitlements, though these remain important. Instead, the inclusion of stakeholders and the distribution of benefits expands freedom for all. The same technique of a fake narrative designed to fool good-thinking citizens into supporting an imperialist capital scheme has been used extensively with regard to climate change. Schwab is a great fan of Greta Thunberg, of course, who had barely stood up from the pavement after her one-girl protest in Stockholm before being whisked off to an address at the World Economic Forum at Davos. He is also a supporter of the proposed global New Deal for Nature, particularly by Voice for the Planet, which was launched by the WEF in Davos in 2019 by the Global Shapers, a youth grooming organization created by Schwab in 2011 and aptly described by investigative journalist Corey Morningstar as a grotesque display of corporate malfeasance disguised as good. his 2020 book, Schwab actually lays out the way that a fake youth activism is being used to advance his capitalist aims. He writes in a remarkable frank passage, "Youth activism is increasingly worldwide, being revolutionized by social media that increases mobilization to the extent that would have been impossible before. It takes many different forms, ranging from non-institutionalized political participation to demonstrations and protests, and addresses issues as diverse as climate change, economic forms, gender equality, and LGBTQ rights. The young generation is firmly at the vanguard of social change. There is little doubt that it will be the catalyst for change and a source of critical momentum for the Great Reset." Oh yeah, the guy wants to use the youth. In fact, of course, the ultra-industrial future proposed by Schwab is anything other than green. It's not nature he's interested in, but natural capital and incentivizing investment in green and social frontier markets. Pollution means profit, and environmental crisis is just another business opportunity, as he details in the Fourth Industrial Revolution. In this revolution, new industrial system, carbon dioxide turns from a greenhouse pollutant into an asset. And the economics of carbon capture and storage move from being costs as well as pollution sinks to becoming profitable carbon capture and use production facilities, even more important. It will help companies, governments, and citizens become more aware of and engaged with strategies to actively regenerate natural capital, allowing intelligent and regenerative uses of natural capital to guide sustainable production and consumption and give space for biodiversity recovery in threatened areas. Schwab's solutions to the heartbreaking damage inflicted on our natural world by industrial capitalism involve more of the same poison, except worse. Geoengineering is one of his favorites. Proposals including installing giant mirrors in the stratosphere to deflect the sun's ray, chemical seeding the atmosphere to increase rain, and the deployment of large machines to remove carbon dioxide from the air. And he adds, new approaches are currently being imagined through the combination of Fourth Industrial Revolution technologies, such as nanoparticles and other advanced materials. Like all of the businesses and pro-capitalist NGOs backing the threatened New Deal for nature, Schwab is utterly and profoundly ungreen. For him, the ultimate possibility of clean and sustainable energy includes nuclear fusion. And he looks forward to the day when satellites will blanket the planet with communication pathways that could help connect the more than 4 billion people still lacking online access. Now, he wants to make it all 5G, and 5G satellites, you know, it's 5G is a military weapon. And when you react to it, it gives you the same reactions as COVID does. Interesting, huh? For him, for Schwab, the ultimate possibility of clean and sustainable energy, I guess that includes nuclear fusion, and all the satellites. Schwab also very much regrets all that red tape preventing the unhindered onward march of GM food, warning that global food security will only be achieved However, regulations on genetically modified foods are adapted to reflect the reality that gene editing offers a precise, efficient, and safe method of improving crops. And all I can say to that is bullshit. The new order envisioned by Schwab will embrace the entire world, and so global governance is required in order to impose it, as he repeatedly states. Now, what's really scary is, and what's come out in the past 2 days, that good old Bill Gates owns most of the farmland now in the United States. Now, that doesn't scare you, growing your own garden. I don't know what will. Now, Schwab, in his preferred future, will only come through improved global governance, he insists. Some form of effective global governance. The problem we have today is that of a possible global order deficit, he claims, adding improbable that the World Health Organization is saddled and limited and dwindling resources. What he's saying really is that his Fourth Industrial Revolution, Great Reset Society will only function if it is imposed simultaneously everywhere on the planet. Otherwise, we will become paralyzed in our attempts to address and respond to global challenges. He admits, in a nutshell, global governance is at the nexus of all these issues. This all-englobing empire very much frowns on the idea that any particular population democratically deciding to take another path. These risks become isolated from global norms, putting those nations at risk, becoming the laggards of the new digital economy, warned Schwab. Any sense of autonomy and grassroots belonging is regarded as a threat from Schwab's imperialistic perspective, and is due to be eradicated under the Fourth Industrial Revolution. He writes, individuals used to identify their lives most closely with a place, an ethnic group, particular culture, or even a language. The advent of online engagement, increased exposure to ideas from other cultures, means that identities are now more fungible than previously. Thanks to the combination of historical migration patterns and low-cost connectivity, family structures now are being redefined. Genuine democracy essentially falls into the same category for Schwab. He knows that most people will not willingly go along with plans to destroy their lives and enslave them to a global techno-fascist system of exploitation. So giving them a say in the matter is simply not an option. Come here. All right. This is why the stakeholder concept has been so important for Schwab's project. As discussed above, this is a negation of democracy, with this emphasis instead on reaching out across stakeholder groups for solution building. If the public, the people, are included in this process, it is only at a superficial level. The agenda has already been presupposed and the decisions pre-made behind the scenes. Schwab effectively admits as much when he writes, we must reestablish a dialogue among all stakeholders to ensure mutual understanding that further builds a culture of trust among regulators, non-governmental organizations, professionals, and scientists. The public must also be considered because it must participate in the democratic shaping of biotechnology developments that affect societies, individuals, and cultures. Getting scared yet? You should. This is not a good thing that he wants to manifest. Oh my God, guys, I am out of time. So next week we will get more into his stakeholder formula and more information on the Great Reset. Look it up yourself, do your own research. Google it, okay? But that's it for tonight. So thanks for tuning in. This is Kathy Bilski, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show on UPR and radio. And again, this is January 15, 2020. Have a wonderful week. And, keep calling down enlightenment, guys. We can't stop with that. May divine enlightenment descend on everyone now. May divine enlightenment awaken within everyone now. And with that, I bid you good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.
So the major media, Mexico, doesn't have a problem sharing third phase moon content. They actually love it because they know it's the best stuff out there. But what's crazy is the American media doesn't want to touch it.
And I got to say something. Say something about too is like over the past 8 months, we've been so active with creating a team and creating documentaries. And even a lot of our panel members right now are participants of that, which is pretty interesting. Doc Skinner, we're working on our documentary, Countdown to Disclosure, that's going to be coming out February 16th. Sorry for the plug right there, but actually Doc Skinner was so cool because we said we need to talk to Bob Lazar because Bob Lazar had something to say because we needed his input about what was just being dispersed on the news about these off-world vehicles being discovered and the Pentagon was about to release something. And then again, it got really exciting because that moment we're able to get Bob Lazar on the phone with our buddy Jim Goodall through Doc Skinner. Tell us how that broke down, Doc.
Sorry, I had to hit the mute button. Well, you guys called me, and I had I put on an event called Disclosure Con each October, except for this past one due to the 2020. And I had Jim Goodall at my event, and Jim Goodall has been named the world's foremost expert on spy planes.
We just had him on a couple nights ago.
Oh, okay, yes. So you know Jim. And so, I knew his relationship, and I said, he liked the boys, he likes the brothers. So I said, would it be feasible if you could sit here at my dining room table and give Bob Lazar a call and see if he'll let us record it? So he called him, and he told him we're recording this, and he mentioned my name, and actually I was kind of giddy. I was like, oh wow, Bob Lazar heard my name, holy crap, but I kept it down. I was cool, acting. And so we got that, and he had some things to say, which I guess you'll have to wait to see the film, right, guys?
I would assume so. Right. I look Brothers, forward to it. We only got about 25 seconds here, so go ahead, Brett.
Yeah, let me just say this really quick, because we dropped our trailer for Countdown to Disclosure on our YouTube channel and shared it on some other platforms. And then what's crazy is 2 days later, we had this drop of the 180-day Countdown to UFO Disclosure that was released. And this is very incredible to me.
All right. You know what? We're going to get into the 180-day disclosure when we come back. We got an incredible panel tonight. Blake and Brett Cousins from Third Phase of the Moon, Rich Giordano. We have Doc Skinner. We have Michael Roser and Apollo Astoria talking UFOs all night long on the Mighty SOR. Stay tuned. Space Out Radio continues right after this. Good job, guys. Good job.
Good panel tonight.
Good panel.
Good to be here.
I think we need some clapping. We're missing some clapping right now.
Man, I just got off a four-hour show with Laura Eisenhower, and going from her wild world to this is so different.
Oh, you're all warmed
much
up.
Much different vibe. Great. Yeah, she definitely warmed me up. I'm trying to come back down to earth to be here with you guys.
There you go.
I have root beer chapstick if anybody wants. Root beer chapstick? Anybody?
Oh, wow. That was nice. Back in the 70s. I remember that in the 70s.
Yeah.
Ooh. I don't know if you guys have experienced this before, but you know, after you get off an interview with some people, you literally feel lighter than air, almost as if the energy has changed in the space that you're sitting in. And it takes you a moment to ground and come down. I don't know if you guys have experienced that before. It sounds like
I'm definitely feeling that hunger right now, especially with Laura.
Yeah.
No, oh, man. Laura's
like, da-da-da-da. Laura goes, da-da-da-da. Laura's fast. She speaks like her vocabulary and the way she puts her syllables together is pretty quick. It's almost like a fluent Spanish person speaking in
English. She, like, channels when she talks. It's so incredible. It's like, you know, sometimes I feel like I just want to take what she said, like, clip it out and, like, stretch it out and go into each little part. Oh, hey, I want to say, by the way, my name is Apollo Astoria, not Apollo Astoria. Sorry, I don't want to be, like, annoying, but I just,
And for the record, Astoria is the place where Goonies was filmed.
Really? I didn't know that.
Astoria, where is that? Absolutely. Yeah.
Where is that?
Astoria, Oregon, on the coast.
Oregon,
yep. Yep.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Watch it again. You're a Goonie, Astoria. Years. You're a Goonie.
You are a Goonie.
We're all Goonies.
Oh, yeah.
Goonie.
And then everybody goes silent.
Just like that. Goonie.
Just like that.
It's like, okay.
It could have been like...
just absolutely schools me, bitch slaps me. Shut up, it's Astoria! You Canadian jerk. Throw my heel at you.
That's right.
Oh. Yeah. By the way, for people who haven't been on this show before, we are hot to mic on YouTube. So just
So we're just filling you up with dead air. My bad.
Yeah. No. I could turn the commercials up, but the way we do it, we're on 6 terrestrial stations now, and so I will edit this show tonight and put it in segments. So this show will play Monday night and on our terrestrial station. So that's kind of how it works.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then the idiot Dave who hosts the show says, "Woo Friday, yay." How smart is that?
It is Friday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my! This is my third show tonight.
But when you're playing this show on Monday, saying "Woo Friday" really doesn't work.
Oh.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with everything going on in the world, it's like it doesn't even matter what day it is anymore. They all feel the same.
I mean, I feel like. Like 2020 just skipped it, you know, like it's just crazy. been crazy.
Yeah, no, it's funny looking back over the last year.
Oh, there you are, Mike.
What's that?
I said, there you are.
Yeah, sorry. No, I was saying, over the last year, it's really interesting to kind of look back because, for many of us, unfortunately,